Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Your Health, providing practical health-related news and information for our community, as Dr. Page and Goldstein specialize in patient care at UNC Family Medicine. And now, Your Health.
Welcome to UNC Family Medicine's Your Health, supported by UNC Healthcare. I'm Dr. Christy Page.
And I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
On our show today, Adam and our guest co-host, Dr. Catherine Coe, will be talking with Dr. Nicole Swiner, family practitioner, author, and former UNC Chapel Hill family medicine resident physician, about the Superwoman Complex and Your Health.
Christy, do you know anything about that one?
Well, that's kind of you. I do know something about that, trying to do too many things.
You are a mother, you are a spouse, you are a community leader, you're involved in the church, and, oh yeah, you're a residency director. Oh, got two small children, if I say that, going back and forth. I bet the pressures sometimes can be immense, and you might feel like a superwoman.
Well, I might feel like I'm trying to be a superwoman when I know that I'm not, but it is complicated navigating this life and having lots of different things going on, but it's also a great blessing to have all of those things in my life. So,
well, you're a hero to all of us, Christy.
You are so sweet.
You don't have to be a superhero, but we're going to be able to talk with Dr. Swiner about some tips and strategies to avoid that. I'm looking forward, because I think it's not just about super women. It could be about super men.
Absolutely. But first, we have some research that matters. We're going to talk about osteoporosis and a link with heart disease in older people.
We're going to talk about common antidepressants that a lot of people take, and could those be linked with fractures like osteoporosis?
Yeah, and another one about seniors calling for help to a national database, mostly in need of transportation.
And then finally, we're going to talk about something that may not be intuitively obvious, but if you're diagnosed with a very early stage breast cancer, do you really need, or maybe you shouldn't even get, more advanced testing to see if the cancer is spread? Interesting.
I know. We have to save time for that. It sounds complicated. Okay. Let's talk about osteoporosis, or when the bones thin, usually linked with age, and a link with heart disease in older people.
Yeah, this was research that was done by some of our colleagues across the ocean, University of Southampton. And they looked at 350 men and women between the ages of 70 and 85 who were involved in a study that over time looked at their bone mineral density, and these were people, all of whom had heart failure or heart disease.
Yeah, and what they found is over time that there was a link between having heart disease with having osteoporosis, and really raises some questions of, is something about the process similar? Is that because, and I didn't get in to see the details, if they really screen for exercise and things that we know about bone health, weight-bearing exercise, weight, etc. But suggests that there may be something in the process of these two different disease pathways that's similar.
And at the very least, these people who had heart disease had lower bone density. And it suggests that if you do have osteoporosis and you're at your doctor's, maybe you should be talking with your doctors at least to say, well, do I have heart disease? Or, you know, maybe see how the treatment of one, if you could get
right,
your physical activity, that'd be good for your heart disease, it'd be good for
your bones.
More to come, but interesting data, and maybe changes how I look at sometimes patients who have osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of looking how we have osteoporosis, what about our next research that matters?
I know, another study about osteoporosis, and this is about these antidepressants that are also sometimes used to ease menopausal symptoms called SSRIs, and these are medications that help a lot of people with depression and anxiety. Medicines like Zoloft and Paxil and Prozac and Celexa, Lexapro.
Can we think of all the generic names for all these?
I don't know if I can. Sertraline.
Paroxetine.
Fluoxetine.
And fluoxetine. We got it right.
Got them.
Yes. That's the Jeopardy question of the year. But most people know them by their common names.
Mm-hmm.
And they are commonly used for depression. Sometimes they're used for menopausal symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Probably less frequently, at least in the United States, but elsewhere they would be. And the question is, do these drugs, are they linked to osteoporosis? What do
right,
you think,
and so in this case, there was a study that was published in the journal Injury Prevention, and investigators focused on 137,000 women, older women between 40 and 64, not that old though, wait a minute, realized, wait a minute, young women
than you.
Exactly. All of who began SSRI treatment at some point in this range of 1998 to 2010 and followed them out and found that, and they compared them to another group of women who had been prescribed other medicines instead of an SSRI.
And they actually found that the women in the SSRI group had a 76% higher risk for a fracture after just using SSRIs for a year than the non-SSRI group. And that risk stayed pretty elevated 2 years, and even 5 years out was still 67% higher. And I think this raises actually some interesting questions. And we were talking before the show, Christy, about, you know, patients of mine sometimes that have osteoporosis, and I look at them and they're thin, and I mean they're not super thin. They don't smoke. They get lots of exercise, and yet they find they have osteoporosis. I'm like, why? Well, maybe I should be looking at whether or not they're using these SSRIs.
Maybe. And this doesn't show a causal effect, but that relationship does lead us to ask questions and to consider for people who maybe don't need those medicines anymore and are older and maybe have just been on them for a long time, considering cutting down to the lowest dose needed for them to be able to feel well and function.
Yeah, we should always remember that there's usually not a free ride in medicine, that there are always consequences of different elements here, and we want to promote kind of natural ways of dealing with things. And I agree with you fully, Christy. People do need these SSRIs because dealing with severe depression is not easily treated. We can treat the thinning of the bones if we need to. We want to treat both of them holistically, though. So something maybe to at least talk with your doctor about.
It's complicated.
Older, you have risk factors for osteoporosis, and you're on these SSRIs. Talk to your doctor.
Agreed. This next research that matters is a report of a national elder care locator. So this is a referral service that provides information, like anybody can call these numbers and find out about resources and communities around the country to help with elder care.
And this was a report on 271,000 calls to this elder care locator last year. And almost one out of five of these calls was about transportation issues. And the majority of the people calling were women. And, you know, in some respects, that's not surprising because these women needed support. They needed transportation to the things that would help them live and stay independently. But at the other time, it made Christy and I both say, hey, this is important work because it extends what we know about staying independently, and we need to think about how do we provide such services more broadly.
Absolutely. And also interesting that, you know, since women live longer than men and apparently typically give up their driving sooner than men give up their driving, maybe appropriately, I don't know.
We should be doing it sooner.
Exactly. Maybe men
don't
are stubborn. I don't know.
I'm 104 and
exactly.
Exactly.
Okay, I'll take your keys. But maybe that's part of the cause, but we really do need to think about this as providers, as we're talking to our patients about how they get around and in our communities to develop these resources more readily for people.
Let's talk about our last research that matters, Christine. It's about people who have breast cancer, stage 1 or 2, early stage breast cancer, and should they have kind of advanced imaging like CAT scans or MRIs or PET scans? And I think both of us thought, well, maybe they should, but the guidelines don't really suggest that. And this research suggests that maybe too many women are getting things that may not be beneficial.
Yeah, so apparently there are a lot of studies now, enough to lead to national guidelines that recommend not getting a lot of advanced testing to look for metastases for these early stage 1 or stage 2 breast cancers that are, it's very rare for them to have any type of metastases. And they found
if you don't have any other symptoms,
exactly.
Other symptoms like problems with your liver or elevated blood values or coughing or chest or abdominal pain, you get them. But if most people, like, you know, you picked it up incidentally on a mammogram, it's an early stage breast cancer, they would suggest you shouldn't have these or at least have the conversation. And I guess we're not having that conversation.
Right. Apparently, after out of 26,000 over that number women diagnosed with stage 1 or stage 2, 86% had at least one imaging test to look for those metastases, which have harm associated with them and
false
positives and other things.
False reassurance. Who
it's
knows?
Complicated because as a patient, I would feel like I would want that. And I understand about these risks and benefits. And need, I think that just speaks to, like, there's an emotional part of that that we all need to learn more about. What are the harms beyond just, you know, getting
like
the screening?
Of, like radiation.
Radiation, exactly.
Yeah, we have not talked about that. Well, that'll conclude the research that matters. We had a chance to talk about metastatic breast cancer. Probably for most early stages, you don't need to have the test for the evaluation. Talk with your doctor.
About transportation is a top need for seniors who are calling for help.
About also, if you take common antidepressants and you're older and have risk factors for osteoporosis, again, talk with your doctor.
And about osteoporosis and a potential link with heart disease in older people. Again, explore that if you have either osteoporosis or risk for heart disease.
Well, that'll conclude the Research That Matters portion of our show. We're going to take a short break. When we return, Dr. Catherine Koh and I will be talking with Dr. Nicole Swiner, family practitioner, author, and former resident physician, about the superwoman complex in your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein, Dr. Christy Page. We'll be right back.
UNC Family Medicine's number 2 ranked national program is rapidly transforming healthcare through excellence in teaching, clinical care, and research. To participate in UNC Family Medicine's efforts to move innovative ideas into action, call 919-843-5112 or email yourhealth@unc.edu.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, a presentation of UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Catherine Koh. Today on Conversations, Catherine, we're talking with Dr. Nicole Swiner, family practitioner, author, former University of North Carolina Chapel of Family Medicine resident physician, about a new book that she wrote, The Superwoman Complex, and Your Health.
Welcome, Dr. Swiner. We're so excited to have you today.
Hello. Thank you guys for letting me be on.
I'm excited about this topic, and then also hopefully to get some ins and outs about the department, seeing that you were a former resident here.
Yes.
Wondering if you wouldn't mind first telling us a little bit about what sparked your interest in medicine and particularly in becoming a family doctor.
Well, I think probably from an early age in school when, you know, teachers and family and all of those folks noticed that I, you know, did fairly well in math and science. And then I always had the love of taking care of children and babysitting. They said, hey, do you want to go into medicine? You should be a baby doctor. And I was like, okay. You know, it sounds very interesting. And I think I was blessed also to have some mentors growing up. My dentist was married to a family physician, and the both of them allowed me to kind of shadow and hang out with them a little bit to see if I was interested. And I even had a little part-time job in one of the offices. So getting exposed early, I think, was very helpful. Once I went to college, I did some volunteering in the hospitals, and that was, you know, really cool to do. So I feel like I was encouraged from a younger age, and then once I started kind of looking and volunteering in places that had to do with medicine, I enjoyed it. So that kind of was the start of everything.
You know, when I think back to not too long ago when you were one of our stellar residents in the Department of Family Medicine, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I knew you had an interest in teaching. I knew you had an interest in the, you know, the full scope family medicine. But I don't think I knew that you had an interest in writing.
I didn't
Tell
either.
Us when when did you start developing an interest in writing? And is it because of medicine or in spite of medicine?
Good question. Probably a little bit of both. You know, so I've always loved sort of reading, you know, outside of work, reading and music and the arts. And I have always been kind of a journal writer growing up. So that, you know, doing things in terms of giving my advice on things like Facebook or being involved with a local paper that I was blessed to be a part of once I graduated from residency called the Triangle Tribune. It was fun to be able to write medicine in layman's terms for the community so they could learn about different topics that maybe they don't get to ask much about, or they feel they have those stupid questions that they were always afraid to ask their physician. So to kind of clarify and explain things in my language was fun for me. And it was also a way to get the word out that I was a new doctor in the area, so it was a great way to get patient referrals. And from that came opportunities to do community events or visit churches and organizations. And through UNC, I was still able to do some teaching with the residents. So all of that kind of became something fun, and I didn't realize it was as much of a passion until I got the chance to do it frequently.
Great. So you have a new book out called The Superwoman Complex and Your Health. What was the inspiration behind this book?
I didn't come up with the theory of the whole superwoman syndrome and complex. You know, there was a book written way before me in the 1980s on the topic called The Superwoman Syndrome. And I'm a family doc, clearly, so I get to see from, you know, start to finish, babies all the way up to geriatrics. And I over the years, developed kind of a niche, or I have a large population of young working moms, or, you know, moms at home taking care of their families. And myself, you know, I've been married now for 6 years, and I have two little ones at home and working full time. You know, I learned to kind of relate to these women, and we shared stories with one another. And so it became kind of a passion of mine to speak to these women about the issues that they were dealing with and kind of learn from one another, the stresses of dealing with work and life and taking care of family and forgetting about yourself and getting mm-hmm. overwhelmed, and then medical problems come out of that. So that was a little bit encouraged me to kind of go into that topic, is seeing the problems that came out of that.
Well, I know that women in general have a lot of responsibilities, it mm-hmm. seems like, that men take for granted. That's a generalization, but I can tell you in my family that that could be mm-hmm. true. And that women physicians maybe or women professionals, because maybe it's not just really physicians, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's not like you aren't just working full time. It's not like you're just not raising a family. Mm-hmm. And in most families, it's not 50-50 necessarily with all of the responsibilities. We would like to say it that way. Even in my family, I'd like to think that, but I'm sure it's not that way. So at what point in time did you begin to realize, I mean, intellectually, you might have known that going mm-hmm. through medical school and training, but at some point in time did you begin to say, whoa, this feels different?
Mm-hmm. So shortly after having my first child, while at work, you know, normal routine, doing things, seeing patients. After seeing
normal, just going back to being a doctor again after having a baby, right?
Saving lives and all that. I was talking to a patient, not a particularly stressful day. Got up to grab my computer to leave the room and felt, you know, all of a sudden my right arm went numb. So I was like, okay, well, I must have been resting on it, typing and all that. And so I kind of, you know, hurriedly, bye-bye, you know, kind of got the patient out of the door because I didn't want anything to happen awkwardly in front of the patient. But then after that, I started to feel, who knows whether it was panic setting in or actually this was a radiating thing, but the right side of my face got numb.
Hmm.
So I said, okay, is this how a stroke happens? Like, what's really going on? And I noticed that I wasn't able to hold my computer up. So then I started to feel weakness. And I said, okay, something's happening. So I called. I felt as if I had slurred speech, but again, it might have been some panic and anxiety kind of, you know, jumping in at that point. But I called for my nurse. She came running. She said, clearly you look like you're having some trouble. Sit down. She grabbed the computer. And I felt almost as if I were going to pass out. Thankfully, I didn't. I didn't lose consciousness, but I definitely felt spent. And so, of course, everybody comes running, you know, EKG and sugar and blood pressure, and everything was fine. But my partner, Dr. Chillicurry, said, you know what, why don't you just, let's just talk to the neurologist, make sure everything's okay. You know, did you have some kind of TIA? Were you compressing a nerve, et cetera? Long story short, everything checked out. Everything was fine, MRIs and all that. But, of course, at the end of the day, everyone says, so how much stress are you under? And I said, oh, everything's fine. You know, I had a baby, and she's great, and we're great, and my father was the one who brought an article to me and said, look, I've been reading this about women in the work field and how they're, you know, women nowadays may be doing too much, you know, maybe stressing and getting overwhelmed and trying to prove that they can handle it all. And I just want you to read it. And so I read it and I said, you know what, maybe I do need to kind of take an assessment, make sure I'm not overdoing it. And that sparked a lot of interest in the topic on the whole superwoman complex.
You know, we're talking with Dr. Nicole Swiner about her new book, How to Avoid the Superwoman Complex, Ways to Balance Mind, Body, and Spirit. And I must say that it's incredibly refreshing to see someone talk about and open up about the problems of the stress in the lifespan, because I think the guy and the guy friends, we'd be like, we're just not going to talk about it. If it's a heart attack, it's our time.
Yeah.
You know, and here you are beginning to bring it up. And one of the things I've heard about the book is that you talk about the elements in your life that serve as stressors that are described as necessary evils. What are those? Mm-hmm. What's that about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have to get up. Most of us have to get up, go work your 9-to-5, make sure the kids are ready for school, and take care of those things. Those are things that we just have to do. You know, if a loved one gets ill, you have to step in and help take care of them. I mean, those are things that you can't control that you have to deal with. But a lot of that can come with some quote-unquote evils that you don't realize are causing you a lot of stress and pain, but can end up damaging you in more ways than one. So you just have to pay attention and make things, you know, try to make it as easy as possible. And if, even if they're not easy to handle, make sure you're taking out that time for yourself to step back, rest, you know, take an assessment of how you're doing in that situation.
I'd love to hear about some recommendations you have about how to take that assessment, because even you as a physician didn't quite recognize exactly how much stress you were under.
Right.
And so I bet there are a lot of our patients who are also not aware that maybe they are also getting a lot more stress than they should be under.
Sometimes you don't realize it until someone brings it to your attention.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation, but we need to take a short break. When we return, we'll continue talking with Dr. Nicole Swiner, family practitioner, author, about the superwoman complex, how to avoid it, all these things in your health. We'll be right back with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Catherine Koh.
Your health is supported by UNC Health Sciences Library and NC Health Info, working together to connect people everywhere with knowledge to improve health. Visit nchealthinfo.org for answers you can trust.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine. Now, more of Your Health.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Catherine Koh. We've been talking to Dr. Nicole Swiner, a family physician, author, and former UNC Family Medicine resident, about how to avoid the superwoman complex. And before the break, we were just about to start diving into the ways that we can assess our lives and see if we are falling prey to the superwoman complex. Wondering if you could go over it a little bit and how could I bring this into my daily life?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we mentioned before, sometimes we don't realize it until someone else brings it to our attention. You know, a loved one says, hey, you know, have you been getting enough sleep? You look tired, or, you know, you seem rushed, you seem stressed out. So sometimes it's that reminder that from a loved one that you need to stop and take an assessment. But it's funny, you know, given we see patients on a regular basis, you know, we will often bring those things to their attention, noticing that their blood pressure is starting to go up for no unknown or any unknown reason, or their weight is changing, or their mood begins to change. You know, their screens are positive for depression or anxiety, and we delve into things that are going on in their life, and we figure out that, you know, you might be overdoing it in one way or another. So it may be through your doctor that it's kind of brought to the forefront. But, you know, I encourage everyone to just make sure that you're getting enough rest. Make sure that you're doing something fun. You know, make sure you have a hobby and you're spending some time, whether it's reading on your Kindle for 30 minutes a day before you go to bed, something that just relaxes your mind where you're not really thinking about everything that you have to do all the time. And then, you know, if you're proactive enough, you'll actually sit down and you can either, you know, journal or through meditation or prayer or worshiping, kind of stop and be quiet. You know, sometimes we need that quiet time to really think, are we doing things in a way that is beneficial to our health?
I know just from having known you over the years that faith is important to you. Can you talk a little bit about faith and how it plays in avoiding this kind of complex, which I know you said superwoman, but I'm going to also say avoiding the Superman complex.
That's right.
I think there are a lot of men out there who will benefit from reading this book.
That's right. I hope so. So, yeah, faith is huge when it comes to, you know, having something else to rely on, you know, knowing that not everything has you can't control everything. You are not the end-all be-all. You know, that higher power, you know, God, Jesus, Yahweh, Allah, you know, that person, that being is someone that has control, and you don't have to be the expert in everything. You don't have to be perfect to everyone. You can rely on things that you have read and you have studied and that you've meditated on to give you some relief, some comfort, to ask for help, to help ease your mind a bit. So I think faith is, you know, I don't know, you know, for those who don't believe, I don't know how they do it, you know, with the stressors of this life in this world. You know, how do you explain to yourself that these things are happening, and how can you live a happy life, a joyful life? So that would be hard for me. I think faith is important for everyone.
You mean we don't have to all be perfect?
You don't.
That's a relief.
See, I cleared up your Superman complex already.
Oh, I feel better.
Yeah.
So 12 ways to balance mind, body, and spirit, top of the title of your book. What are one or two that we can incorporate into our daily lives?
I think exercise is a huge, huge component of stress relief. You know, find something fun that you can also get enjoyment out of. So if you love to run, run as frequently as you can. If you like to dance, if you like to stretch, do yoga, find something that you'll enjoy doing so it doesn't feel like exercise. It's hard for a lot of us to exercise because exercise is not always fun. So find something that you enjoy doing so it's both a passion, a hobby, and exercise. And do it, you know, 2 to 3 times a week so it's your time. I'm a huge advocate for sleep. I love sleep. If I could list sleep as a hobby, I would, without sounding lazy. But sleep, sleep, sleep. Don't stay up till midnight every night doing and finishing that very last note. You got to, you know, make sure everything is perfectly done and cleaned in the kitchen. You know, relax, go to bed, turn your phone off, turn your iPad, your computer, the screens, turn them off so that you can have restful sleep and you're not awakened and stimulated every hour because of a text or Facebook alert. Which is something I have to work on, too. But, you know, go to bed at a reasonable hour and get rest.
I know that my wife is going to get a copy of that book. She's going to open up that chapter, and she's going to underline that with a highlighter and go, see, I'm right, I'm right.
Push it to you. That's right.
And one of the things I wanted to say about the exercise that I have only recently begun to appreciate is it's so much more fun when you're doing it with someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're out there just having to go out and do and motivate, it's almost like it's torture. But then, like, my daughter the other day said, Dad, how about if we go to a spinning class tomorrow together?
That's fun.
And, you know, I thought, okay. And it was hard
it's
and everything.
It's hard.
But now we share not only the exercise and the anticipation, we share the experience and we can talk about how sore and miserable we are for a couple of days.
That's right.
You have a chapter called Listen to Your Heart. Tell us about that one. What's that about?
So it's a play on words. It has a lot to do with heart conditions, you know, blood pressure and stroke and heart disease, but also just listen to yourself emotionally. You know, take an account of how happy you are in your current living situation. Do you love your job or is it just a job that you're going to every day? Is there something that you could be doing that you would love to do even more? Is your relationship a happy one with your partner or spouse? If not, figure out why. Or sometimes we're in relationships that we don't need to be in and we could be in a happier situation. So listen to the signs of just finding a better situation to be in. If you're not really happy, do something about it.
And do you have an example from your own
Absolutely.
Experience?
Absolutely. My husband, Rick Swiner, is lovely, and I love him very much. And before I met him, I was in a horrible relationship. I like to call them toxic relationships.
What is called toxic M?
Yeah, toxic M is bad. And, you know, it doesn't always start out bad. Of course, everything's great when you first get into something. But soon, and this can be true for friendships, for family relationships. You know, there are toxic relationships come in many forms and phases and fashions. So, you know, it sometimes takes, like, again, it takes that other person sometimes to say, hey, you don't seem too happy. This doesn't really seem like a good fit. Maybe you need to make your way out of it. And as soon as I woke up and realized this wasn't the best relationship to be in walked my now husband. You know, so sometimes you have to move that mess out of the way so that your blessing can come.
What a great message. Yeah. Your last chapter, titled Celebrate. I think something really important we should all really do is celebrate our accomplishments and things in our life. How do we incorporate that into a busy daily schedule?
Yeah. So, you know, find those things that you enjoy. You know, mine is that Starbucks caramel macchiato first thing in the morning. Is as simple as it sounds, but it puts a smile on my face. Or if you enjoy listening to music while you work, or I'm trying to also be better about going out for a walk or just at least getting outside in the middle of the day just to remind myself that, you know, there is an outside world. It's not just about me typing on my computer and talking about blood pressure all day. Find those little things. The simple things matter a lot that just you can sprinkle in your day and into your week so life just doesn't seem so drab.
So small daily celebrations rather than saving them up for just one big celebration. Or doing that as well.
Doing that too.
So it's not crazy if I gather my nurses and my colleagues around and we all sing in between patients sometimes.
That's
not totally crazy.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. When you said celebrate, my first thought was celebrate. You know, but it's this idea of just being happy, and that's what a wonderful message. You know, you're having an incredible career. You really are succeeding in ways that someone outside would say you are a superwoman.
Yeah, it's kind of
and here you for fun you've written a book, you know, so you're a successful novelist as well. So what legacy though do you hope to leave behind to those two young kids and the husband, the family? What mm-hmm. what do you want to leave?
I definitely want them to be proud of mommy for being a hardworking person, but someone who liked to have fun. You know, I don't want to wake up at 80 and look back on my life and say, you know, I worked really hard. And that's good. You know, I do want to say that, but I don't want that to be the only legacy I leave behind. I want people to remember that I was joyful and I like to laugh a lot and I like to dance and I took out time for my family to do enjoyable things. So I want them, particularly because I have two girls, I want them to have their career and go to school and do that, but really find what your passion is and make sure that you have time to love and laugh a lot.
Nice. Where can people go to copy the book?
I was going to ask the same question.
Yes.
I want to get it first.
No. Yay!
I got three or four women in my family who want it.
So I work at Durham Family Medicine in Durham, and so I always have some stocked there, of course. We just got good news today that Flyleaf here in Chapel Hill is going to allow us to be in their stores.
Great.
I'm on Amazon and Kindle.
We'll put a link to Amazon on our website because we have listeners all over the world.
Yes.
And I know many of them would like to see a copy.
Yeah, I hope so. So, yes, Amazon and BarnesandNobles.com. And then locally, along with Flyleaf, the Regulator Bookshop in Durham and Quails Ridge in Raleigh.
Great. Well, yes. I'm looking forward to going to get a copy.
Yay!
Thank you so much for sharing these with us.
Well, we want to thank Dr. Nicole Swiner for being our guest today on Your Health and sharing her spirit and her writing with us. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break, but coming up on House Calls, we'll be answering questions about your health. You're listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Catherine Coe. Stay with us.
Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, sponsored by UNC Family Medicine. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Your Health. For the House Call segment of our show today, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about your health questions and concerns.
And if you have a question you'd like for us to address on an upcoming show, please send your comments to yourhealth@unc.edu. And now we'd like to ask our executive producer, Daniel Lane, to read us our very first House Call question. Daniel.
I woke up last week with my left ear feeling completely clogged. I kept messing with it and tried to get it open, but it won't. Now I'm starting to get pain in my ear. I don't have any other signs of feeling sick. I tried Sudafed, Zyrtec, and nasal spray, but nothing seems to be making it better. Any ideas?
What'd you say, Daniel? That's the problem here, right?
Yeah.
We have so many people who have this kind of symptom, and the biggest problem is they don't hear right, and something's off.
Right. You feel like, well, and you feel like you're that feeling when you're on an airplane and you come down and your ear can't, like, unclog. That's what this sounds like to me. And it's something, the thing that jumps to my mind is something called eustachian tube dysfunction, where you've got that tiny tube that runs from the back of your throat up to your ear, and it kind of regulates the pressure. And when it gets inflamed or clogged or just irritated, it can be dysfunctional, where it doesn't open up and kind of gets clogged up, and it feels awful.
And we have a fancy medical term for that called serous otitis media. Almost sounds like serious otitis media, or fluid behind the middle ear. That's another way of saying it. And that fluid back there can be uncomfortable, although it usually doesn't get infected. And most times, it just takes time to go away.
That's
like
exactly right.
Sometimes, which is frustrating for folks.
It is frustrating. And it sounds like you've tried some of the good things and drinking fluids and nasal saline and Sudafed, and those things are things we all like to try. But it is mostly time, I think, that makes it better.
The tincture of time, so to speak. So good luck. Thanks for that good question. Mm-hmm. And if it's still there after several weeks or getting worse, that's when you go see your doctor.
Definitely. Okay.
Daniel, what's our very next house call?
My daughter gets huge welts from regular mosquito bites. Each one causes a big coffee area, which is a lot worse if they happen in her armpits or in the front of her underwear area. Is she allergic?
Well, I don't know if she's allergic per se, but there is a condition called papular urticaria. We may have talked about this a couple of years ago, and a picture is worth 1,000 words in this. Matt, if we can ask our health sciences librarians to maybe put a picture up of papular urticaria, which is just like really sensitive skin to bug bites. And because there are some people like this, it sounds like, who get these huge whelps when they get bitten by a bug versus me.
I get, like, you know, teeny whelps.
And sometimes if kids are scratching, they can get just sort of that extra sort of ooze or that extra honey crusting on the top of it. And so you want to try to cut their fingernails and encourage them not to scratch. Make sure that you're tending to the wounds if there are some with Neosporin or just regular cleaning. But usually they just go away. So it's a matter of, like, focusing on long sleeves and using bug spray. Those stuff with DEET works, although we don't like to put it in our children's mouths or eyes, but it does work well.
Putting it in their mouths? I hope not.
Or, you know, you don't want it on their fingers if they're really young.
And one thing that can be done is you can get the over-the-counter cortisone cream, hydrocortisone 1%, and a little-known secret. If you put it under occlusion, you put a little Band-Aid over it on top of that big whelp, you actually can increase the potency several fold. Another little known secret, we don't want to give this one away, put ice on it. It's a really potent anti-inflammatory, and it cools and soothes as it evaporates. So cheap.
Yeah, good ideas, Adam.
Yeah, we're a practical pharmacy right here.
Yeah, right here. Okay.
But sounds miserable. Hope that they're doing better.
Yes.
What's our very next house call, Daniel?
I'm 65 years old and just started getting itching under my armpits when I wear deodorant or antiperspirant. I keep trying different ones, but the only thing that seems to stop the itching is when I don't wear any at all. But I don't want to be wet or smelly. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, without saying which of your favorite co-hosts for Your Health Radio might have had this problem in the past, and it's not Christy, there are certain deodorants that are very irritating to me. And it's like it's mostly the ones that have kind of perfumes or those additives in them that are sometimes irritating. So these additives can cause what's called a contact dermatitis. Mm-hmm. When in contact, it itches, and you can't use them at all.
Right, and sometimes you don't get like a clear rash with that, but if it's itching when it's there and it's not itching when you don't wear it for a few days, then that is a good sign that that's what that is. So part of this is trying to identify if there are antiperspirants or deodorants that don't cause this, and some of that's trial and error. Or
the unscented ones work, I think, much better than the scented ones. It's the scent. It's that's what a lot of people are allergic to. But obviously, you don't want to just walk around, you know, free in the breeze and wet all the time and feeling miserable. So try the unscented ones. Sometimes these 100% natural ones or just pure baking soda may well drying and adequate.
And then also, if this is something you've been doing just out of habit, it's worth trying. I mean, some people don't wear a lot of antiperspirant or wear antiperspirant but not deodorant or vice versa. And that does the trick to meet your needs. So it's also sort of kind of figuring out what your goals are and what you need.
Hopefully that's helpful. Daniel, what's our very last house call?
I have a growth on my arm that is raised and comes on top of one of those age spots that my doctor said was benign. Is the new raised part probably part of the same age spot, or should I be concerned that it's something more worrisome?
Well, this is one of those ones that I'm going to vision. I'm going to close my eyes and vision what it is. And the answer is unqualified, maybe.
It's really hard to do these rash ones on the radio without seeing a picture of it. We gotta get a good way for people to send us their pictures. But to your question, if it's on one of those age spots, and I'm thinking what you mean is one of those, something called a seborrheic keratosis, or one of those dark sort of barnacle-looky things.
Or when doctors are out in the bar together, they say, oh, I saw a Seb K today.
Yeah. But if it's one of those, they do sometimes get raised and kind of grow on top of it. But if it's new and it looks different, I would get it checked out.
You know, these things are so easy to biopsy if they need to be and find out, in particular if it's new and worrisome. So go talk with your doctor. Mm-hmm. And hopefully when we see it next time, we'll hear that it was just a Seb K. Well, that'll wrap up our house calls for today, and we want to thank all of you for joining us today for your health. We hope we've addressed issues and concerns that are important to you, and you can send us your own questions at yourhealth@unc.edu or visit us online at yourhealthradio.org or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes.
And we want to thank our guest co-host, Dr. Catherine Koh, the UNC Department of Family Medicine, UNC Healthcare, for their sponsorship, and our guest today, Dr. Nicole Swiner. We hope you'll join us next time on Your Health.
On behalf of Your Health, I'm Dr. Adam Goldstein.
And I'm Dr. Christy Page, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Take care.
The purpose of Your Health Radio is to educate listeners on healthcare issues. Listeners should always discuss their own health or medical concerns with their personal physician or other healthcare provider. Your Health is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
You've been listening to Your Health with Dr. Adam Goldstein and Dr. Christy Page, presented by UNC Family Medicine.